Everyone, and welcome to the latest in our podcast series, A&M Tax Talks Tax Policy Updates, where we bring you insights into the latest developments in global tax policy and controversy matters. My name is Tom Lobb. I'm a Managing Director in the International Corporate Tax Team at A&M, and I'm based in London. I've been working in tax for 25 years now. I joined A&M 2 years ago at the start of 2024, having previously worked at EY and KPMG here in the UK. I'm joined today by David Smith from our Irish tax practice. David, would you like to introduce yourself?
Hi, I'm David Smith. I'm also a managing director in A&M's International Corporate Tax Team, and I'm based in Dublin in Ireland. I've been with A&M since November last year, and I have about 40 years experience as a tax advisor, having worked previously at EY.
Great, thanks, David. So without further ado, we'll launch into the podcast. So today's podcast is focused on the new ultimate parent entity, or UPE, Safe Harbour. This was announced by the OECD in January of this year as part of the side-by-side package of new measures for Pillar 2. So perhaps before we get too into the detail, we should just think about why does the UPE safe harbour exist? So what is the issue that, you know, the OECD and the inclusive framework we're trying to solve for here? So if we just think about the Pillar 2 model rules, if the parent jurisdiction, the UPE jurisdiction, hasn't implemented an income inclusion rule, then there's a risk of taxation via the under-tax profits rule, the UTPR. So that's led to a lot of concerns for jurisdictions in that situation around double taxation risk and also the compliance obligations, particularly if the UPE jurisdiction has a limited risk of low tax. And just to touch on what those compliance obligations are, if your UPE jurisdiction hasn't implemented an income inclusion rule, but many of the subsidiary jurisdictions have, then if they've implemented the UTPR as well, then each of those jurisdictions would have to consider whether the UTPR applies, potentially file some, you know, tax returns, do some calculations. So there's a risk of audit risk there. So you can see what is a concern of some of these jurisdictions, particularly if they're low taxed. So the UPE Safe Harbour is, I guess, the inclusive framework's response from that, to that, sorry. It does differ from the full side-by-side package or side-by-side Safe Harbour. We'll touch a bit on that today. But David, do you want to just talk through a bit about what actually is the UPE Safe Harbour?
Sure. Thanks, Tom. So the UPE Safe Harbour, it's much narrower than the full side-by-side system, full side-by-side Safe Harbour. And it does only one thing. It switches off the under-taxed profits rule, or the UTPR, in respect of profits located in the ultimate parent entity jurisdiction. So if or where the UPE Safe Harbour applies, other countries should not be able to collect top-up tax under the UTPR on income earned in the UPE jurisdiction. So it's very much focused on the headquarters country and the entities, the companies and subsidiaries and the parent located there. It does not switch off the qualified domestic minimum top-up taxes. They still apply. And it does not remove the globe filing obligations. So as you can see, it's much more limited than the side-by-side Safe Harbour. So who is eligible, or who might be eligible for the UPE Safe Harbour? Well, the first thing to note is that M&E groups must elect into the UPE Safe Harbour for it to apply. And to do that, the UPE must be in a jurisdiction that has what's called an eligible domestic tax system. And that eligible domestic tax system must have been enacted and be in effect on the 1st of January this year. There are three key criteria that must be satisfied for a jurisdiction to have an eligible domestic tax system. The first is that there must be at least a 20% statutory nominal corporate income tax rate. The next is that there must be a qualified domestic minimum top-up tax or a corporate alternative minimum tax, a CAMTI, based on financial statement and income that's consistent with the policy objectives of the global minimum tax at a nominal rate of at least 15%. And finally, there must be no material risk that in-scope M&E groups headquartered in that jurisdiction will be subject to an effective tax rate on their overall profits of their domestic operations below 15%. So 20% minimum corporate income tax rate in the country, a QDMDT or a CAMTI similar to the Pillar 2 minimum tax, and no material risk that the group in the groups in that country applied kind of on a jurisdiction basis, not on a group by group basis, will fall below 15% in their effective tax rate. Now, assessment of UPE tax regimes will be undertaken by the inclusive framework during the first half of 2026, and those that qualify will be added to the OECD's global minimum tax central record. Unlike side-by-side regimes, qualified status for UPE regimes is limited to pre-existing regimes. It will not be possible for a jurisdiction to obtain qualified status for something that will qualify or that might qualify in the future for the UPE safe harbor eligibility criteria, but that were not in place on the 1st of January. So it's even more limited in terms of it must have existed after these rules were published. In fact, must have existed before these rules were published. That's the system in a nutshell, Tom. You might pick it up now and kind of just explore what countries might meet these criteria.
Yeah, because as you say, David, you know that the criteria have to be met on the 1st January 2026. So, you know, we just think about which countries might be able to meet those criteria or already do. And I think start perhaps by thinking about why were the criteria sort of why did it have to be pre-existing regimes? And our understanding is that there was quite a lot of pushback from some of the members of the inclusive framework who were concerned that this really should only be available for a small number of countries. And so they want it to be the case that the country's rules already had to be in place. So that does contrast to the side-by-side safe harbour, where there is an opportunity for countries to potentially change their rules to fit within that particular safe harbour. So for the UPE safe harbour, what we understand is that currently there's kind of three main countries that meet these criteria already, and that's Colombia, India, and Nigeria. And there might be one or two more that could qualify, but we're really not expecting it to be very many more than that. And so when I've discussed this with colleagues and clients, you know, one of the questions that comes up is, you know, would a Pillar 2 country implement it? So might the UK implement this system? And I think the UK would arguably meet those criteria, right? Because it's got the 25% tax rate, we've implemented a QDMTT and probably meet the third criteria around risk of top-up tax. But actually, if you step back and say, well, if you've implemented a Pillar 2 QDMTT, that switches off all the other Pillar 2 rules. So you've already got the protection from the UTPR, which is really the main benefit of this safe harbour. And then if the UK, in the UK's case, you've also got no UTPR risk on your subsidiaries because we've implemented the income inclusion rule. So there might be a little bit of reduction in theory in what goes into your globe information return in respect of the UPE jurisdiction. But if you've implemented a Pillar 2 QDMTT, that information is probably being collected for those purposes anyway. So in summary, I don't think anyone who's actually implemented Pillar 2 is very likely to benefit from this or to want to benefit from this safe harbour. So, I mean, one thing we talked about, David, is actually, when you look at the criteria, you know, you've already got a 20% tax rate, you've got a CAMT or a QDMTT, and then potentially you've got little or no material risk of a top-up tax charge, really. So it feels like the rule switches off the UTPR in scenarios where it was probably quite unlikely to apply. So I think that what is the benefit then? And I think it comes back to that compliance obligation. So I appreciate a lot of you listening may not have looked at this as much as some of us have, but the UTPR, if you've got a situation where the parent jurisdiction has multiple subsidiary jurisdictions that have implemented that rule, that's a lot of extra filings for UTPR, potentially a lot of extra risk. And, you know, the UPE safe harbour applies, it switches that risk off and takes it off the table. So, you know, you could imagine a large Indian multinational group could see that as quite advantageous. So I think that's the main benefit of it, really. Doesn't really remove, doesn't touch the subsidiary jurisdictions. It just gives you reassurance that you won't have any compliance to do in respect of a UPE jurisdiction, and you're going to minimise the amount of, you know, risk of tax authority audits, or indeed financial statement audit questions on how you're managing this risk. And I think, David, perhaps you'd come in there around the type of questions we've seen on UTPR from financial statement auditors.
Sure. Well, you know, it's a really good point, Tom, because the thing to really, you know, bear in mind in relation to this is the UPE safe harbour only affects the UTPR in the UPE jurisdiction. So if there happen to be undertaxed subsidiaries elsewhere outside of the UPE jurisdiction, UTPR could still apply to that. And indeed, the IIR could apply at an intermediate parent entity level. So it really is focused only on the UPE jurisdiction. So as you say, it is a very limited practical impact. Where I've seen, and of course coming from a low tax jurisdiction where, you know, QDMDT is likely to be, you know, a feature. And, you know, in talking to clients about their audit exposures or how do they deal with their auditors in terms of this, you know, theoretically, you know, say for Irish subsidiaries or other companies, in fact, it applies across the board, but certainly in low tax jurisdictions, how do clients convince their auditors that the tax provision is, you know, there's no material risk of understatement of the tax provision when looking up through the group? You say, well, what about the profits in the parent company jurisdiction or in the other low tax entities around the world? So while this does nothing for the others, it certainly reduces the risk or eliminates the risk of the local subsidiary, say the Irish subsidiary, having to consider whether they are on the hook for a top-up tax for the under-tax profits of their parent in the parent location.
That's what I've seen as well. And we've worked with some clients to where they have got a UTPR or top-up tax that will be paid by the UTPR. We've inserted a Pillar 2 holdco into the group literally just to mean that tax is paid in one place with one filing rather than having to deal with this issue of multiple filings across multiple jurisdictions and all the additional hassle that comes with that. So that is we can see the benefit of switching off the UTPR. I guess with this safe harbour, it's just it only helps the parent jurisdiction. And if you had a low tax subsidiary somewhere, you still have that risk. So I think that's interesting. The other point, just quickly to finish with, I suppose, that I looking at these rules and the criteria, you know, we get a lot of clients generally, especially in the UK and other higher tax jurisdictions, saying, well, I've got to do an awful lot of work, calculations, et cetera, to prove out that I don't have to pay top-up tax in the UK or Germany or elsewhere. And actually, if you look at those criteria, in this situation, this UPE jurisdiction is able to satisfy that risk relatively straightforwardly, but actually one of the criteria is QMTT. But in future, could we have something where if you can prove there's no material risk of top-up tax under your local rules, you can get, maybe there's a quicker way to prove it out rather than doing the full globe calculation. But that's perhaps being a bit too optimistic, and we'll have to wait and see. But yeah,
maybe one to watch, Tom. So that's probably everything we wanted to cover in this short and sharp podcast. Thank you, everyone, for joining us today. Stay with us as we continue this journey in our upcoming podcasts. Please also check out our monthly newsletter, which will bring you the latest key updates around selected editorial pieces from our Global Tax Network. And don't forget to follow this channel. There'll be regular insights and updates through podcasts coming your way. And if you haven't done so already, please subscribe to receive the newsletter directly into your inbox. Thank you.